What could IBM's advanced analytics solutions mean to federal agencies? It could mean taking charge of vast amounts of disparate data. It could mean identifying insights that minimize errors, reduce fraudulent claims, and prevent improper payments. And, according to some industry leaders, it could mean saving $200 billion over the next 10 years. That's smarter governing on a smarter planet. Learn more at ibm.com/federal.
Look out in the street there. You know what you don't see? My car. Because I had to sell it to pay the lawyer I hired when I got busted for drunk driving. Know what else you don't see? My girlfriend, who decided that a guy with no car and no license and no money was no fun.
Cops are out there cracking down on drunk driving all across the country. And they'll see you before you see them. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Get ready for Foodie and the Beast with Nikki and David Nellis. A foodie born and bred, Nikki loves dining out, chatting up chefs, and insider industry buzz. David thinks a great meal is a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under 20 bucks. Foodie married Beast. And now they have the Food and Wine Variety Show that has everyone talking. From famous chefs, winemakers, and brewmasters to authors, farmers, and restaurant critics. It's Foodie and the Beast, and it's on now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast, the world's greatest food and wine variety show.
the D.C. area's only food and wine variety show.
Why hold back? That's what I say.
Okay.
So, we're taking you all on a voyage today.
We are.
Andy.
Oh.
Andrew. We're taking you on a voyage.
Okay, I don't think there's anybody in the studio.
1968. Are you kidding? I was already in a wheelchair by then. It was terrible. All right, so we're taking you to Frederick. But since we can't go to Frederick that easily, we've brought Frederick, Maryland to you.
Us.
And what a time you're going to have. Frederick, Maryland is a jewel. I don't know if you're listening and you haven't been to Frederick anytime recently, you are missing it because Frederick is one of the coolest day trips. Not even a day trip. It's really only 40 minutes north on 270. And we have brought you a cross-section of the slice of life in Frederick that you're not going to forget.
Well, absolutely. You know, you and I went out there a couple of months ago in September when we were looking at dogs because we needed to get a new puppy. And I hadn't been to Frederick in probably 20 years. And I was just...
So you were one?
Yeah, I was one. I was one and a half. And it was just fascinating. There was all these shops and great restaurants. There was art and there was this whole world there happening. And now we've been out there since September, I would say easily 10 or 12 times.
Yeah.
And there's just such a vast variety of things to do. So we just thought it would be so much fun to bring a little bit Frederick here in studio today. And we have such a nice variety of people. And we're going to be doing lots of different things.
Well, let's start off with that. We've got Karen Norman, who's the executive director of the Downtown Frederick Partnership.
And because she can tell us about everything we saw.
She's going to talk the serious business stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. And
I'm sorry, I don't drink coffee, but I am today, and it's so yummy.
Well, tell them why.
Well, I am, if you would let me finish.
Well, get on it, man.
Okay, we have Dublin Roasters in studio. Serena Roy is in. She is the owner. I've actually had the pleasure of going to her place of business and watching her roast the beans, and she brought us our very own version, the Food Fight Blend, which I am sipping on right now. It's yummy.
I've never had anything named after me before.
Well, it's not really named after you.
No.
So, but anyway.
I'm the fight part in
food. You're the
fight
part,
yeah.
Exactly. And we have Moxie's Bakery Cafe, which is run by Cakes for Cause. Ellen Ross is the executive director. It is a fabulous organization doing really good things and making very tasty treats. We're going to hear all about it. And Oils and Vinegars are in the studio. We have with us Maggie Lepertz. I want to say it right. Maggie Lepertz. She has the Oil and Vinegar Emporium out in Frederick. We've been there, too.
Well, we discovered that. We didn't discover it. No,
I mean,
but we were walking around and we saw it, and it's this awesome
little boutique shop filled with olive oils and vinegars and big canisters.
It's like a tasting room.
Right,
it's really
that you can
cool.
Taste. So we're going to do some tasting here in studio.
And the man.
You can walk up to the mic. Come on, Tom.
Tom Flores is the brewmaster at Brewer's Alley. I've been to Brewer's Alley. I've had your brews, man. I want to say this. The Baltimore Sun recently said of you, are you ready? He's a kind of Indiana Jones of beer with hands in all kinds of arcana of the trade, from growing his own barley to recreating the beers of colonial times. And as the only person in the room who was alive in colonial times, I want to thank you on behalf of all my friends who are dearly departed. So let's talk about Brewer's Alley. That's the original Frederick County's first brew pub, right?
Yes.
All right. So tell us the story.
Well, it started in 1996. My boss, Phil Bowers, he's the owner, and he was a home brewer for many years, driving down the road to Westinghouse with a job that he had, and I suppose was just dreaming of something better, and he opened up this brew pub.
What could be better than working for Westinghouse?
I think it was the commute that got to him.
Okay.
So he opened up this brew pub and right in downtown, and it was a great time for him to do it. He got this this building that was a historic building. It was the Opera House, the original Opera House in Frederick in the early 1900s. And the building itself goes way back to the founding of the city. And it was part of a revitalization program that State of Maryland had. It was one of the, I think it was actually the very first loan that he got that was given. And there's a picture in the office of Governor Glendenning and Mayor Grimes and my boss all together celebrating that event. So he's turned that building into something that has really become an icon downtown.
That's a crazy place. I mean, we had quite a meal there.
Well, we just went through some renovations that are pretty remarkable, too. So it looks even better inside now. So
why beers? I mean, how did that sort of come into it?
Well, that's a really good question. Like I said, he was a home brewer for a number of years, and so that was kind of his first love, his initial passion of getting into this. And then as he opened up this brew pub, he learned a whole lot about what it takes to be a restaurant, and, you know, it was a real eye-opener. And, you know, the beer thing was a perfect fit with what he, you know, came to the table with. He hired a great chef, and the two together really merged and married in a way that you can only really do in a brew pub. You can't get fresher beer anywhere than in a brew pub. Mm-hmm. And so it was a really important part of introducing Frederick and Frederick City and Frederick County and the surrounding area to craft brewed beer, beer with flavor. And so we've been doing that for close to 16 years now.
Okay, now you brought in a variety of beers mm-hmm. today that you have brewed.
Yes.
Tell us about the first one that you're going to be pouring for us today.
Well, we're going to go to Serena next. Is that how it works?
No, first we're going to go to Kara, and then we're going to go to Serena.
All right. Well, I guess since that's going to be the first food product after beer we're going to get to, I'm actually going to violate the normal rules of tasting here. You normally go from
violation on the show so early. We haven't even had anything to drink yet.
Usually that doesn't happen until 11:10.
Well, see, you normally go from lower intensity to higher intensity, but I'm actually going to start with the most intense beer I have here today,
okay.
Simply because I want to tie it to what Serena's going to talk about later with the coffee. So it's a beer that we brewed called Brood Awakening,
mm-hmm.
and
cute.
It was kind of a play on, Brood Awakening.
Mm-hmm.
We got that.
Yeah, spell it out. Yeah.
So, you must have looked around the room and said, everybody here looks really stupid.
But the beer is what we call a coffee stout. So stout beer itself has a lot of roasted characteristics, mm-hmm. Real intense flavor, and the aromatics are just so complex and wonderful. And we really thought that having the coffees that Serena works with incorporated in this beer would really just bring it to a whole other level, and it really did. So what I'm going to do now is go ahead and crack this open, start pouring it.
Excellent.
Okay. All right.
I never thought I would see the day that I would live long enough to hear somebody talking about beer the way, you know, the wine dudes talk about wine.
Well, we've only just begun.
Yeah, right.
It's great.
Okay. All right. Well, let's bring in Kara. Kara, you're the executive director of Downtown Frederick Partnership. And we've been talking with you. I mean, you guys have been here for a while, but we've been talking about all the great things going on in Frederick. Tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing to help facilitate what's going on there.
Sure. Well, the partnership is a nonprofit that's dedicated to the economic development of downtown Frederick. So mm-hmm. we work closely with the merchant community and lots of community stakeholders to make sure that downtown is thriving and is doing as well as it possibly can do. And that means all kinds of things, events, activities, workshops, and helping our businesses really succeed. You mentioned downtown as being a great destination, and, you know, we're thrilled. We have more than 250 retailers in downtown, and of
Amazing.
That mix, more than 30 restaurants, coffee shops, sandwich places. So, you know, for food destinations, we're probably getting close to 50 food-related businesses that you can visit either for chocolate, olive oil,
or a meal. Zoe's. We went to Zoe's chocolate, which is great, too.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking before, because my question was, where do the customers come from? And the thing I didn't realize is that Frederick itself, within the city limits, there's 60,000 residents, right?
Yeah,
makes it almost as big as Rockville.
Yeah, we vie for second in the state, second in population. Sometimes we're second, sometimes we're third. It sort of depends on the latest count, but
behind
we are a big city. Behind Baltimore.
No kidding. Well,
so how did the economic development evolve? How did you guys? Because there was always that one street, the main street. There was always cute shops and things like that.
Yeah. Market Street.
But
Market
now
Street.
With the canal and Chabro, I mean, it's just so much bigger. There's so much more there. I mean, at least in my eyes. I mean, how did that all evolve?
It's been decades of work by lots and lots of different people. So it's really been a community effort. But we've seen great things happen, like the creek, which is a great public improvement.
Excuse me. If you're all going to do cheers in the studio, you have to say that out loud. Cheers. Chin, everybody. I'm so sorry.
No, I wasn't looking.
It was a moment.
Okay. Go ahead. So anyway, the creek is really a great improvement and was really critical. At one point, downtown Frederick actually flooded. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, as you can appreciate, nobody invests in a place that floods. So that creek actually is a beautiful amenity.
It's our house.
but it actually plays an important role in downtown in keeping it out of the flood. So that was one of the key things that happened in downtown history to kind of put it on the path to success. We also have retained some major employers. Our county seat is there. City government is there.
Okay.
And those folks helped create a population for lunch. And with lunch population, then we started to have some of the restaurants that we have here today. The restaurants grew in success, and their success brought in more retail. So it was a kind of an evolution.
But let's talk about the retail, because the retail is really interesting. I mean, the mix is nuts. Lots of fun vintage shops and very cool boutiques. I mean, how did you reach out to those people, or did it just sort of happen organically? I mean, nothing is organic, let's be honest.
Well, to a degree, it did happen organically. Okay. I mean, if you go back to some of the businesses that we have some amazing stories behind our entrepreneurs, people who are from Frederick and dreamed up a business and came back and put it there. And at this point, with Frederick's success, we have people who have heard of Frederick come and say, I want to start a new business, and this is the place to do it. This is the environment that fits my new business.
That must make you feel good.
The interesting thing about the mix is next door to a store that has great fashions for women. There's a new version of a head shop with, I mean, you can buy LPs. Yeah. Hey, I bought some stuff there. Wouldn't you laugh at that?
Maybe the head shop.
Seriously, it is a head shop. It's cool. I bought that cool bicycle chain bracelet there and everything. Yeah. I mean,
we bought great posters for the kids' rooms.
The interesting thing is the mix of, I mean, the retail mix is really...
It's vibrant.
We were talking about other places around the country. That one of the places that we used to love was Manayunk outside of Philadelphia, which has just kind of fallen apart.
But they just haven't maintained it. Adams Morgan. Adams Morgan used to have a ton of retail in it, and it just could not sustain it. But you guys clearly have found the formula that makes it work. What?
No. Well, we're going to have to take a break. But
we have 2 minutes. We have two minutes. With spring and summer coming, tell us about some of the big events that are happening.
This is one thing about downtown Frederick. There is always another event almost every weekend. But the big ones that are coming up
Everybody is nodding, into spring, into summer.
Yeah. Mayfest is the next big one, the first weekend in May. We have all kinds of entertainment on the street, activities for kids. And then the really fun thing to celebrate spring, we do Build a Bouquet, where you go from store to store and you get a free flower at each location. And by the end of the day, you have a bouquet of flowers to sort of welcome spring. So it's a very nice way to enter into the season. In mid-May, around the 19th and 20th, we have a garden tour, which is beautiful gardens in downtown where people open up their gardens and let you, check them out and see what they've done.
Is that a big thing in Frederick? Are people really into their gardens?
Yes, there's definitely a huge crowd into gardening.
Cool.
And then we head into the first weekend in June where we have the Frederick Festival of the Arts, where they take over Carroll Creek and the entire thing is lined with art booths. So it's a great time to come out.
I want to get hung up for a minute on this bouquet thing because I don't have to buy anything. I can just go store to store and get a bouquet.
Yes.
And the cheapness keeps coming. It just doesn't stop.
I love it.
All right. Well, now we actually do have to take a break. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. Stay with us. We've got more Frederick County to hear all about.
Like farmers markets? None's better than the fabulous Central Farm Markets in downtown Bethesda at Bethesda Elementary and in Rockville's Mid Pike Plaza. Each has 40-plus vendors with huge selections of local natural meats, poultry, organic produce, cheeses, plus yummy pastries, pies, cakes, fresh breads, even seafood and more. Want prepared foods to go? They got that too. Bring the family, bring the dog to Central Farm Markets Sunday in Bethesda and Saturdays and Thursdays in Rockville. Visit centralfarmmarkets.com for details.
This is Dave Noble with IAAIS. We help people who live with vision loss. That's why we collaborated with Best Buy and the Insignia brand to create the Narrator, a new HD radio receiver with specific functions for visually impaired people. In addition to bookmarking and accessing extra channels, the Narrator tells you what buttons you've pressed.
Tune up.
We believe everyone will love the Narrator and encourage you to visit hdradio.com and bestbuy.com to learn more.
Federal News Radio, available on demand at federalnewsradio.com and on your smartphone with the free TuneIn Radio app.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Well, I was born in a small town. I'm going country today. We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. I want to go back to Tom Flores from Brewer's Alley because...
This is delicious.
This is delicious.
Thank you. It really is.
But as I sat here listening to you...
And it is really strong.
Would you stop?
Okay, sorry.
Sat here listening to you and I mean, you're clearly in love with beer. How did that happen? Were you just like a party guy in college or...
No, I guess you could call me a beer geek. So if you're going to be any kind of geek, that's the best kind of geek to be. but I actually started homebrewing in high school. And I know this
you know you
did
weren't
your
allowed
know?
To do that then.
I mean,
it's a science experiment, Mom.
It really was.
Really, it's a volcano.
And, it, you know, there's a real long story involved. I don't know if we have enough time here, but basically...
No, we don't. Don't
right.
worry.
Okay. So the point is, I had this hobby, and I was going to University of Maryland College Park studying biochemistry and just kept learning about life, just the chemistry of life, how life actually happens at the molecular level. It's a fascinating subject, but every time we come up with something that applied to this hobby, I thought, that's really kind of cool. That relates to beer. And it just kept happening over and over and over again. So I thought, you know, at some point, I really need to explore this as a potential
I just want to say, when you want it to, everything relates to beer. It's just a matter of twisting everything.
So I had a job at the Wild Goose Brewing Company in the summer of 1991 as kind of an experiential learning thing. I just wanted to go to see, can I even do this? You know, is this something I have the aptitude for? Can I do it well? Do I enjoy it? Can I make a living at it? You know, all this kind of stuff. And I answered all those questions in about 10 days. I was there for the whole summer and the first few weeks just doing nothing but cleaning kegs and helping on the bottling line. By the end of the summer, I was running brews solo, filtering, doing the whole works. And obviously I answered to the brewmaster. I wasn't running the show, but I was helping everywhere. And it was a really neat experience because I got to see everything from the grain that we received to the finished goods in the bottle. And at such a young age at that point, you know, I was like just learning, soaking up like a sponge. I'm thinking so much to this. I have to learn yet, you know, and I'm still learning. I've been brewing more than half my life now and there's still a lot to learn, but I do really enjoy it. It's a great craft. What really drew me to it in the first place was the fact that there's a tangible fruit of your labor at the end of the day. I distinctly remember standing above an open fermenter, pitching the yeast, and looking at that and thinking, wow, in 3 weeks, that's going to be in a bottle and somebody's going to be loving that. And it was from my hands. Like, it was really cool.
Well, so, let's get back to the first beer that you poured, because yep. We're going to have you pour a second beer. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about how you and Serena, come on up to the mic, because Serena is going to be talking to us about her company. But I want to sort of hear, Dublin Roasters, how the two of you work together.
Well, we're actually neighbors right now. Okay. We had an expansion go off-site from the pub.
Oh, so you're the brewery across the street.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't realize
all we
that.
All need is a crosswalk or a bridge.
Because that highway gets very busy.
Yes.
So about a little over a year ago, Serena and I met because I wanted to talk to her about roasting grains. And that's a project we kind of keep... It's on the back burner.
I have the grains. Yeah, we're in the store.
Wait, was that a pun? Roasting grains is on the back burner.
It's a good one. You're still awake. That's good. It's a project we kind of keep kicking around. But we got to this point where one of our brewers wanted to do a coffee stout, mm-hmm. and immediately a light went off in my head. I was like, I knew exactly the person to talk to. So we went across the street. Literally, just Todd and Maggie and myself walked across the street, met with Serena. We took a look at some roasts that she did, some blends, and just made the decision right on the spot of what would work best with this beer.
All right. Well, while you're pouring the next beer, which we will talk about after you pour it, let's bring in Serena Roy of Dublin Roasters. Serena, you can pull that mic down a little bit so it's closer to you.
What exactly are you trying to say?
There we go. Okay.
Serena. Right, there we go. So I got the first question because when Nikki told me this. All right. So you were a cop.
Oh, yes.
So how did you go from roasting people in the interrogation room to roasting coffee?
I've never heard that before.
Been waiting.
Right.
I'll bet you haven't.
Thank you.
Well, everything is original when I say it.
Well, I was a Frederick City officer in our very own area that we're all located on Market Street.
Did you ever ticket any of these people?
Never. Okay. Never.
We are all law-abiding.
You're right, law-abiding citizens.
I worked in
K-9.
Which is
why you left being a policeman, because you didn't need to be there anymore, right?
Exactly. Everything was going so well, I stepped
out.
But
how did you go from that to coffee?
It was a hobby. They put me on night shift, and I'm not good in the evening, and I'm really not that great in the morning. I'm not productive at certain times.
Don't sell yourself short.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where I needed coffee. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't find really good coffee. So I went to work for the only coffee roaster in town, and she taught me how to roast. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely love the process. So when I was done with night shift, I would go in and roast a little bit. And it's very relaxing. It's very methodical. I think everybody in here has seen the roasting process.
Everybody but David,
but he'll be up soon to pick up some of his blends.
Right.
So it was just one of those hobbies. Got an internet together while I was still a police officer. Did some road shows, some farmers markets, and everybody was buying it, and they loved it.
Mm-hmm.
So at the 10-year mark, when I had to make a decision, do I stay with police work or do I go with something that I'm really having a good time with? I loved both equally, but coffee seemed to be a lot safer.
but how did you make that next step? I mean, you have this little coffee shop, it's Darling, but how did you go from there to roasting your own and setting up a place of business?
Well, it was kind of the opposite. I actually only roasted and sold it to friends and sold it on the internet.
Oh.
So I was already making money. It was already a part-time job when my daughter was little. It, you know, kept me in the house, so to speak.
Right.
So as it was growing, police work was busy. My daughter was getting older in high school, more events. And then coffee was growing. People wanted me to open a store. And I thought, in my spare time,
right,
when am I going to do this? So it was kind of a natural transition. I didn't go cold turkey from one to the other.
Well, tell us what we're looking for in coffee. I mean, you know, like I said, I used to be a coffee drinker.
Caffeine.
I stopped years ago. No, they're not just looking for caffeine. I mean, in today's world, whether we're talking about beer or chocolate,
sure,
or wine or coffee, I mean, people are really looking for integrity,
right,
in the food they're putting and drinks that they're putting into their systems. So
yes,
tell us about what you're trying to produce.
There's a few things you're looking for. First, you know, whether it's fair trade or organic or coming from, you know, a country that you're helping,
mm-hmm,
all of that is definitely important. But you want to pick a coffee that speaks to you, that you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Dunkin' Donuts drinker or a Starbucks or whatever, it's whatever that blend is that you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
It can be recreated by a small roaster. They can create the blend, whether it be lighter or darker, like a Cameroon and the Stout,
mm-hmm,
or the Food Fight blend, which has a Guatemala and an Ethiopian Sodamo. We can recreate that on a smaller level, but it has to be what you enjoy.
Right.
You enjoy cream, sugar, raw sugar, honey. I mean, it all matters. So
people
it's
put honey
very
in their
tailored
coffee?
Yeah, you can. Mm-hmm. I brought honey sticks in case you want some.
Oh, interesting.
And it's local from
Mount Airy. She needs to be on the show more.
There you go. I got everything in that box over
well,
there.
Well, so as you were roasting coffee for your own palate initially, what were the flavors you were looking for?
I was looking for, I like darker roasts of coffee, mm-hmm, but I also like some smooth. I liked the way it would hit my palate in different areas. So
mm-hmm,
therefore, I always created roasts that had three different beans in them just to keep the consumer interested, the person interested. So, for example, Moxie Blend, we really catered to what Ellen thought was a great cup of coffee. We mixed beans the way we thought her customers would enjoy.
Okay, so when you mix beans, just to get an idea of the roasting process,
mm-hmm,
you order beans from all over the world?
All over the world. Some people come to me, some places I visit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a relationship with farmers that
okay
you develop. And that way you can ensure it's a quality crop. You know where the money's going. So you basically would pick a bean that's going to, if Ellen gave me a description of, I'd like a medium type roast, well, then I wouldn't start with 80 different varieties. I could really hone in on like a Latin American green bean.
Well, this is the perfect opportunity for me to ask, what is Juan Valdez really like, and what is the nature of his relationship with that donkey?
You know, I totally expected when visiting Peru to find some of the growers to look like that. It's not the case. It's not the case. They're in Range Rover, so it's just not the case.
Yeah, is that because of the coffee?
I think it's going well.
He actually ran over the donkey.
That's probably, yes.
Well, so, but when you're sourcing your beans, what are you looking to do? And I, does somebody care? Like, you do Brian Faltaggio's at Volt.
Yes.
You do their coffee. Did he come to you and say, this is what I'm looking for? I mean, how long was the process to create your blend or, like, the Moxie Cafe blend? What does that process take?
Well, initially, when Brian came to me, it was prior to the restaurant even opening. Mm-hmm. So we had, like, a year to kind of sit and try out some beans. And I learned a lot from that experience. Mainly, we don't need to start with 80 because you've forgotten what you already tasted at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So I became a little bit more savvy by the time I got to Moxie in that I wanted to know what she liked first, and we start from there.
Okay.
So when Brian met, we tried a lot of coffees, and in the end, we picked three very high-end coffees that had
what
the same
principles. What does high-end mean?
High-end meaning all organic, fair trade, from farms that I had visited or farmers that I had met.
That makes sense,
so
given
it's a quality control.
Right.
So, and then actually roasting it, we wanted to roast three characteristics, kind of a medium, kind of a high-end Kona, and then a little bite at the end. So that's kind of how the premise was for
are
his roast.
Are you the only coffee roaster in Frederick? I mean, are you it?
I don't know of any others. It's a small market, I guess.
Why Dublin Roaster? Is that a nod to the...
Well, I had to pay taxes the first year I started, so I had to come up with a company name before I paid taxes, which was the next day.
Right.
And I lived on Dublin Road, so...
There we go.
It cleared the name, the legal name search, so I went with it, and it's stuck ever since. So,
well,
and I am a little Irish, so... Okay.
Everybody's a little Irish.
Everybody's a little Irish.
I mean, I'm not, but...
What?
Now, I mean, I wanted to ask you, when it comes to coffee drinking, does it bother you when somebody, I know, does it bother you when somebody puts milk in their coffee or sugar in their coffee? Do you feel like it ruins the profile of the
coffee? Not at all. I am the least coffee snob you could ever talk to.
Okay.
I don't do traditional cuppings.
I was just going to ask about that.
It just is, it's a lot of time. And if you're doing it for, you know, a profile to write up somewhere, that's fine. But the general public and myself, if I want to know what a bean tastes like, a coffee tastes like, I'll just grab a bean out of the batch and chew on it.
Taste it.
Just one. Because I don't want to get, you know, all... Jacked up and wired and solving world problems at 3 a.m. Just one bean is sufficient and you can know what coffee's
that could be my problem.
So how do people go about getting blends from you?
You can do many things. If you happen to be in the Frederick area, you can stop by the store.
Well, you know, Droz are coming out to Frederick today.
All
just
right.
Morning.
We close at 4.
Okay.
We're not a traditional coffee shop where we don't open super early and we don't stay open super late. It was never my idea to run a coffee shop. I wanted a coffee roastery, and actually I was just going to have a clubhouse in the front, but people kept coming in and sitting down. So I had to start a coffee shop. I know. So it became like a tasting thing. So that's how it became a coffee shop. But really, we're very interested in community events, and it's a large, large front room. So a lot of people come and sit and hang out. It's not your traditional open early coffee shop.
Great. All right. Well, give everybody the website. And of course, we'll get to that at the end of the show.
Well,
as
it's www.dublinroasterscoffee.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, you brought several coffees with you today.
Which one
is your favorite?
My new favorite.
I love the food fight blend.
It's really yummy.
I've never brought together a combination of Guatemala and the Ethiopian Sadamo.
Mm-hmm.
The Sadamo is a more difficult one to get. It has a fruitier taste to it, and I wasn't sure if I would like fruity, but honestly, with the Guatemala, it's good stuff.
Okay.
I also brought Moxie.
Okay.
That's a very
hot
coffee.
I'm going to ask you, because we have to take a quick break,
yes,
if you would pour everybody a little sip of the Moxie so
sure
we can try that. And this is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We're going to be tasting some coffee, tasting some more brews, and I think we have some olive oil in our future.
And we're in Frederick.
We're in Frederick. We'll be back in just a sec.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out. When someone gives blood and a life is saved. That moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies. And your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Soon, this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. March for Babies! Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
I was riding to tell you that my feelings tonight.
Oh, I love Squeeze, don't you?
I love Squeeze.
I think we used to listen to that when we were dating back in Civil War times. Speaking of which,
I definitely listened to it when I was dating somebody, but I don't think it was when I was dating you. Sorry.
You told me that I was your first.
I've told a lot of people you were my first.
All right, anyways. Okay, we'll do divorce court later. We're back on Fooding the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we've taken a trip to Frederick, Maryland by bringing Frederick, Maryland here. Mm-hmm. We've got Tom Flores in talking brews, and Tom...
What did you pour? Now we're starting from the beginning.
Yeah, so this is our best-selling beer. It's the Kolsch, and mm-hmm. I poured it from a bottle. We have it in bottles all throughout the state of Maryland. Unfortunately, at this point in time, we're not in D.C., but we are looking into getting into D.C. at some point in the future. And the Kolsch is a very light-bodied, easy-to-drink beer. There's a lot of flavor to it for as light as it is. In other words, there's some complexity there that you wouldn't expect with this level of intensity. It's a dry finish, so when you have the beer in your mouth and you go to swallow it, there's not a whole lot of a cloying sweetness or anything like that left behind. And it goes really well with a lot of foods. In fact, this lemon and ginger scone right now, it's really a nice match.
You know, there's all the citrus note there. I'm like buzzing from the sugar in that It's delicious.
While everybody's buzzing and since we're talking sugar.
Maybe it's the coffee, actually.
I'm going to work a smooth segue to Moxie Bakery because we've mentioned it several times. Ellen Ross is the founder. And it's a bakery with a cause and a purpose beyond getting us sugared up. So
it absolutely is.
Tell us about it.
Moxie Bakery is the social enterprise operated by the nonprofit Cakes for Cause. Mm-hmm. We provide job training and life skills lessons for kids aging out of the foster care system or living in public housing. And the classroom that we do it in is actually the working restaurant in downtown Frederick.
So here we have DC Central Kitchen, which is not exactly that.
I know, Michael.
But it's skills and feeding and all of that. Mm-hmm. It's something for the future. What gave you the idea? Who cares about these kids? Why?
Oh, don't say that.
No, you know what I'm saying. I mean, what made you care?
Well, that's a really good question. I worked in child welfare for close to 15 years, and the organization that I worked for dealt primarily with older kids and watched them too often transition into adulthood without having any kind of plan or any kind of understanding of what the next steps were.
What happens when they age out of the foster care system?
When they age out of the foster care system,
is that 18?
It's 18 generally. In most states, there is legislation that allows them to stay in until 21. But what happens then is services are gone, and they have to figure out how to function as an adult. They have to figure out how to get a job, how to, more importantly, keep the job.
Right.
We can all get jobs, can't necessarily keep them. How to budget so that they can pay for their apartment and their car and get to work and all of that sort of thing, with sometimes not a whole lot of foundational skills to help them get there.
So were you a baker?
Social and life skills are so important, but how did you go from what you were doing to this? I mean, did you create this? And if so, how did you make that happen?
I did create it. I founded it. I love to cook. So mm-hmm. it was always a thought process that I would try to marry the two things that I loved doing, which mm-hmm. was serving these older kids and cooking. And it was actually part of the public housing revitalization 4 years ago through the Hope 6 project that brought this to fruition, because we partnered with the Hope 6 project at the north end of town mm-hmm. and they outfitted the bakery. So they underwrote all of the major expenses associated with putting the bakery in place. Mm-hmm. What we did is we developed and designed the curriculum. We did the public relations and marketing, and we've built the customer base that brings in the revenue dollars that help support the program.
You know what's so interesting? I mean, what you guys have done in Frederick, I'm sure there were bumps and bruises along the way, but it sounds so smooth. You know,
it just sounds like a spectacular program.
Trying to install a water fountain in the District of Columbia could take, 35 years, and water doesn't come out of it.
Well, and I think that's the same in almost every community, but what the unique thing that we had was this partnership with the Housing Authority, with a group of like-minded people, Kara Norman, Michelle Kirchner, all of the people came together and said, yes, we want this in Frederick. So it was the like-minded people that helped evolutionize the downtown district of Frederick, helped bring in these kinds of revolutionary social programs mm-hmm. that we're seeing at the North End. And it was the right people at the right time believing the same things.
Well, so let's talk about how the program actually works. I mean, how do you reach out to these kids to bring them in? And how do they deal with your curriculum?
Well, it's a 6-month apprenticeship. We take referrals from a variety of social service agencies. And what they do is they come in immediately and start working in the restaurant. So the first thing that we start working with them on is foundational skills, the things that are like showing up on time, wearing the appropriate uniform, not talking back to your boss, all of those kinds of things. Those mm-hmm. are what we consider the foundational skills. And then we gradually start to build the bakery and the food skills on top of that.
Okay.
At the end of their time in the program, they're out fronting with the customers. They're mm-hmm. the ones that the customers have seen evolve from somebody who would always have their head down and never say hello when customers walked in the door, to the people who are coming out and saying, well, our daily specials are this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
So with the customers, really, it's important that the kids are a part of our staff, our team, that the customers see every day, because that's something that our customers come and visit us for, in addition to, we hope, the food.
Well, now, with the restaurant community in Frederick, which is, I mean, tremendous, mm-hmm. how do they partner with you to help these kids find jobs afterwards or to bring them in for internships, things of that nature?
Yeah, most of the kids in our program are not necessarily interested in food service. And for us, that is about, the food service industry is incredibly flexible, as you probably know. You mm-hmm. could go and work almost anywhere. So we try to keep that in front of them to say, you can always get a job in a restaurant because you have these basic core skills now. And yes, we're always willing to partner with any of the restaurants in the area, and we have partnered with some of them, and some of our kids are working in downtown restaurants.
Excellent. Now tell us about, you brought in two tastes today that were both incredibly good. Are these your recipes? Where are the recipes coming from? And how do you teach the kids them?
Well, there are no original recipes. Mm-hmm. These are recipes that are tweaked off of recipes that I've seen somewhere else. But these are two of our signature items. There mm-hmm. is our lemon ginger scone, which is a traditional butter scone that's punched up a little bit in flavor with buttermilk and eggs. And then we use crystallized ginger and lemon in it. And that's one of our most popular breakfast items.
Mm-hmm.
And then our rosemary butter cookie, which for many people is a surprise at the beginning because they wouldn't think to necessarily marry a shortbread cookie with fresh rosemary. But this is, in fact, one of our most popular cookies.
It's a good idea.
Demolished it.
Yes.
I don't think there's any more left.
Yes.
We all took it.
Melt in your mouth, buttery shortbread, and fresh rosemary.
Now, we're going to have to wrap up with you, but are there ways to volunteer with your organization? I mean, how can people get involved and help out?
Well, I actually left our 5K cupcake run today with more than 1,000 runners in downtown Frederick to be here. So there's events that we have, but then we also do take volunteers. I will always let people come in and teach and work with the kids if they're interested in doing that. And there's a lot of ways that you can get involved. You can get involved in developing curriculum pieces, mentoring the kids in our program.
All right, give the website.
www.moxiedesserts.com or cakesforcause.org.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming in today, especially with so much you guys have going on today. I really, really appreciate it.
And now we're going to transition to olive oils.
Olive oils and vinegars.
Yes.
So,
yum.
Olive oil.
Hello, oh. Popeye. So we met Maggie Leverts in her store while we were just walking around Frederick one day, and it is a cool store.
Thank you.
It's set up like a wine tasting room, but it's an olive oil and vinegar emporium.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it is gorgeous.
It is.
And
thank you.
Did you invent the I don't even know what
system,
this is called.
The spigot system?
No, it's called a fusti, and they're very popular in Europe because that's what they all store their olive oil in.
Mm-hmm.
My dad did invent the stand that they're sitting on. Okay. He created that.
Cool.
So
we call it the Leverts.
Well, how'd you come up with this idea?
Well, it all started in Spain. I was a Spanish major in college, and I went to Salamanca, Spain, to learn Spanish. I had all the schooling for it, but I really needed to practice and put it into use. And I did a full immersion program with a host family and came back with the true love of fresh olive oil and vinegar.
And, a lot of people go to Europe and, fall in love with coffee or olive oil or breads or pasta or whatever, paella.
Yeah.
How did your passion for olive oil and vinegar translate to opening up a business where people could taste it?
Well, I think it was mainly because I was so young. I graduated from college and started a job in the school system, and I just wanted to do something more. I've always wanted to own a store or run a store in Frederick. I didn't know what it was or what it would be, but when I came back, I was just thinking about all this fresh olive oil I'd had there, and you really can't get it fresh if you get it pre-bottled here in the U.S. because it sits on a shelf and it's exposed to light or it's exposed to heat, and it has no flavor compared to fresh right out of the tap or fresh from the field. And I just kept looking for it and trying to find it, and then obviously got a little obsessed with it because now I have 50 different kinds, and that's all I sell.
Let's talk. So all your olive oils are from where?
All over the place.
They're from all over the place.
Yes. So I get them from 8 different countries, and then the vinegars are from 3 different countries. All of our balsamics are from Modena, Italy, because
that's where they come from.
How many times a year do you go there?
Well, we just came back from it in January, so that was fun.
Do you need any help?
Yeah. Field trip.
Right, field trip. We're all about the field trip. So how did you decide on your products, and how is it that your olive oils are fresh in those canisters?
Well,
do you know what I mean? Like, how do you get them, and how often do you have to change them? And
I get them in really small batches.
Okay.
So there's never a lot of olive oil sitting in a tank for too long.
Mm-hmm.
Olive oil is very fragile, which a lot of people don't really think about. But if you keep it in a larger quantity, so like a 2-gallon quantity, it's not going to deteriorate as quickly. And deterioration is bad because that's what makes it unhealthy for you.
Okay.
So the longer it sits, the higher the free fatty acids are. And you really want to keep it in a large quantity before you put it into a bottle. So then we pour them fresh. You'll come into the store, all the bottles are empty, and then we pour them right in front of you. So you know it came out of the tap that day. And if you want it as fresh as can be, you want to open it that day and use it.
Now, are you custom blending any of these oils? Like, are you like a little mad scientist in there playing with things?
No, only by accident a few times. We came up with la vanilla.
They're flavored, some of them. I mean, some of them have... Do they come that way?
Yes.
Or do you?
We don't do that. I get them just how they are. And
well, tell us. So you brought a couple in today for us to try. So tell us. You tell us quickly about them. Then we're going to go to a break. And then we come back, we'll taste them on air.
Sure. I brought a plain oil, which is... by no means plain. It's the freshest oil you can get right now. It's from California, and it's a new featured premium program I started where we'll have one really fresh oil that will I get in a really tiny amount, and once it's gone, it's gone. So it's not going to be your staple
oil. You snooze, you lose.
Right.
Okay.
I also brought a chipotle, so that's just a base Tunisian oil with chipotles infused.
It's nice and spicy.
Fantastic.
I'm gonna like
it's
that.
Nice heat to it and smoky. Then I have our traditional 18-year-aged balsamic, which is smooth and sweet and great on desserts and ice cream and fruit. And a wild blueberry balsamic, too, which is a base 12-year-aged balsamic with blueberries added.
All right, great. Well, you get to pouring.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. I think we have one more beer coming up, and we're going to be sipping on oils and vinegars. We'll be back in just a sec.
Federal News Radio, available on demand at federalnewsradio.com and on your smartphone with the free TuneIn Radio app.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today, or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
L. It's for the way you look.
What is this?
At me.
This is way too highbrow for me.
It's for the only one.
What is this song, man? All right, he's waving me off. Well, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with some lounge music. And Maggie Lepertz is in. We're talking gourmet vinegars and gourmet.
I don't like the
oils.
Word gourmet. That sounds chintzy.
Well, everyone can enjoy it.
All right,
it's
right.
But not like that. Gourmet is like, it sounds like you're trying to make it more better than it is.
Before we get back.
Yes, I'm sorry.
To
go ahead. Go ahead.
I just got to quickly thank everybody that makes the show possible. All our wonderful sponsors, the people at Georgetown Bagelry. And next week when we're at Carmine's, we'll tell you more about that. We're introducing a new bagel to the Washington area.
Mm-hmm.
Neighborhood Restaurant Group, that's Rustico, Evening Star, Tallulah, Vermilion, Buzz Bakery, Columbia Firehouse, Birch and Barley, and Church Key, our friends at the Two Founding Farmers. And we've got a new remote we're going to talk about. We're going to be broadcasting live from the Founding Farmers in Potomac here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, May 20th.
The folks at Modus Hospitality, they own Noti Bianchi Dish and Circle Bistro, Charles Schwartz and Son Fine Jewelers, Bethesda Central Farm Market, and Carmine's.
There we go.
And we'll be live there next week. So
right.
Let's get back.
Maggie,
to Maggie,
so you poured us a whole bunch.
Yes.
Let's talk about your two favorites here. The blueberry, what's amazing to me is that I think balsamic vinegar can have such an intense flavor.
Yes.
It's amazing to me that you can really taste the blueberry
mm-hmm.
in it. How do they make that happen?
It's just a aged 12-year aged base balsamic, and then blueberries are added to it. So a lot of people question us, you know, is there sugar added?
Right.
Is it bad for you? But no, it's just the key is the base balsamic needs to be a good, true
so
aged
is there
balsamic.
Physical, like in what you have, is there physical blueberries in it? Or are they, you know, they're
well, by the time
out?
They pour it off, the blueberries aren't floating around
right.
in there. But yeah, it's blueberries. And it's just the base balsamic is what makes the difference. Because if you try to do that with, you know, a grocery store 4-year aged balsamic, you'd still have that intense tanginess of a vinegar.
Right.
But these don't have that, which is what just blew my mind when I was in Spain and I had a true balsamic. It's like syrup. It's so different.
Right. I actually bought from you the fig one.
Mm-hmm.
It's delicious.
It's good.
I put it like on top of pork or roast.
Yeah,
it's
and you
really
can do
lovely.
So much with these vinegars, which not a lot of people know about.
Well, it's a finishing.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
instead
you
of just salads.
You can put the blueberry vinegar on pancakes.
Yes.
Yes.
For real.
You really
mm-hmm.
could. All right, so just very quickly, tell people when they come to your shop what they get. Tell us, like how they walk in, how they can taste, and how they can get their own bottles.
Well, you come in and we kind of explain how it works because it's a little overwhelming with 50 different foosties staring at you. Mm-hmm. So you come in, we tell you how it works. You get these little paper sample cups and you can go up to any tap and taste them. Mm-hmm. We even have our specialty oils like black truffles. We taste those too. And then when you find the ones you like, you we actually changed it now so that we fill the bottles because it gets a little messy otherwise.
Right.
But we pour them fresh right in front of you, and then we seal them right in front of you. We use a shrink wrap seal and package them up, and you're good to go. But this way you know that what you're taking home you love.
And can you order it online?
Yep. Right, so. It's not automated, but it's all on there, and then you just call it in, and we're shipping all over the U.S.
Excellent. All right. Will you tell people where they can find you on the internet, please?
We're at loveoliveoilvinegar.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you for bringing these samples. All right, Tom, we're going back to you.
Okay.
Is this going to go good with my blueberry vinegar?
Actually, it does, but I think it goes the best with the chipotle oil.
Oh, okay.
There's a little of that heat there and the spiciness.
He
of
has
the
an answer for
here.
Everything.
That's why I spent so much time in detention in high school.
Ooh, this is good. So what are we drinking?
This is the India Pale Ale. This is actually our second best-selling beer. Mm-hmm. And this is a beer that's characterized by a dominant flavor coming from the hops, which is really the primary spice of brewing. If you think of it this way, when you make crabs, you throw in some Old Bay or whatever, but you have to have those crabs there. Without the Old Bay, they're just sort of steamed crabs in a kind of a bland flavor. So that spiciness of the hops really livens up the flavor of the beer. The reverse, though, if you just throw Old Bay into boiling water, you don't have that same.
You just got dirty water.
Right. So the malt that we use is really important as well. So that's kind of the base of what the beer is. And this has a really nice combination of a little bit of a caramel note from the malt, as well as the floral and citrusy herbal notes from the hop and the bitterness that's there. It's not super bitter. It's definitely different than West Coast IPAs that you may be familiar with that are super big.
They are really bitter.
They punch you in the nose with hops. This is more like a British style, a little more subdued, a little calmer. More.
And where do you get your hops from?
We actually get them from all over the place. The bulk of what we use comes from the Northwest. Okay. Oregon, Washington, Idaho, the Yakima Valley, Willamette. But we also get hops from Europe, the Hallertau District in Germany, the Czech Republic, England as well, some hops that we get from England.
So are there hops distributors, or do you have to go and buy from
the big farmers?
Well, basically the way it works is you have growers that work together with brokers, and then the dialogue between the brewers and the brokers is where that commerce is. So it's rare that you have brewers, at least at our scale, that talk directly to the growers. But it's actually starting to change, especially with the emergence of some folks who are actually trying to grow some locally sourced hops as well. But we as a craft brewing industry, we've grown to the point where it's worth the time of the growers to talk directly with us now. And it's not like we're putting the brokers out of business or anything, but we want to have as much of a communication with those growers as we possibly can.
Well, I don't think it's any different than what's going on with the restaurant industry. Yeah. I mean, the chefs and farmers, or restaurateurs and farmers are, developing relationships to get the product that they specifically
Plus,
want.
Plus, if you are putting them out of business, the root word of broker is broke. So
They're incredibly
important.
That's
tough luck, right?
They are incredibly important to make sure that we have a stable supply of hops that is a very high quality. And without them, we won't survive. So I'm trying to say is that it's a lot of people involved in this. It's a very specialized industry, though. Really, brewing is the only industry that uses hops. They're used as botanicals and some other different things, the facial products or whatever, things like that. But you don't really see them being used en masse anywhere other than brewing.
Okay.
All right.
Will you please tell everybody where they can find you and where they can find your restaurant?
Well, we're right in downtown Frederick, 124 North Market Street, the only brew pub in downtown. We do have a website. It's brewers.ally.com.
Okay.
And there's no apostrophe in the brewers.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. It's been very educational this morning.
You.
All right. We have a bunch of
Talk
about.
Quick announcements. We are going to be live again at Carmine's down on 7th Street in Penn Quarter next Sunday, the 22nd. We're going to be down there with all kinds of food and great guests. We've got top chefs Mike Isabella and Spike Mendelson who will be in there. A guy you'd be interested in.
Can I just say?
No.
Can I?
Yes.
Okay. We have an incredible bunch of people coming in next week. It's going to be a crazy show.
Am I underselling it?
Yes, you are. Okay. Greg Engert is coming in, who I told Tom about earlier. He's with Birch and Barley, a neighborhood restaurant group. They are producing their own beer as well, but he's going to be pouring beers not just for us, but for everybody in the studio audience. Mary Beal Adler from Georgetown Bagelry is coming in. She's bringing in bagels
for everyone.
She's
bringing in the new happiness bagel. So if you're not happy, come down to the
show. And if you are a Top Chef lover, Mike Isabella and Spike Mendelsohn are both going to be in.
I just said that.
I know, but you didn't say it well. Michael Mina's
Isabella and Spike Mendelsohn.
Okay, Michael Mina's David Varley is coming in. And next Sunday, the day of our show, is also Koshan 555. Five chefs, five pigs.
Five.